Hi, podcasters. This is Andy Studna, Associate Editor for Applied Clinical Trials, and I'm here today with our Editor-in-Chief, Lisa Henderson. For today's episode, we are speaking with Mike Roussel, VP Data Product at Optimize Rx.
Prior to his time at Optimize Rx, which began in August 2021, Mike spent 2 years as a product director with Clarivate, and Mike also has experience in research and consulting with Athena Health, Flood Advisory, the Brattle Group, and First Niagara Risk Management. And on today's episode, we'll be discussing Mike's career as well as different technology approaches in our industry. So thank you for joining us today, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I'd like to start with your own role right now, currently, Mike. Could you explain your current role at Optimize Rx?
So I am our VP of Data Product at Optimize Rx. And I guess what that means day to day is I run our AI team. Our AI team right now is mostly focused on real world evidence solutions for life sciences brands. And so given the Optimize Rx platform is a messaging platform for life sciences brands, this is messaging right at point of care in EHRs, the added value of our AI team, and so via our real world evidence solutions, is that we can hyper target and hyper personalize those messages. So rather than kind of communicating with a host of providers, a host of healthcare providers, some of whom may not be the right audience for a message for a brand, we can ensure that every dollar spent on messaging is optimized. And those, pardon the pun of the name. What we do is help life sciences brands identify the right patients that are newly eligible or next eligible for their medication or their medical devices. Then from those patients, identify their providers, and finally identify the right time to communicate with those providers. And at Optimize Rx, with all of our campaigns, what we help life sciences brands do is deliver that information right at point of care. So not only can we deliver that information at the highest impact area, our AI solutions enable that information to be exactly at the right time when the provider will be able to use that information. And now at Optimize Rx, my role is mostly a delivery focused role. So while we do have a large commercial organization that's focused on interacting with clients and selling new work, my role is mostly to help our cross-functional org. So this is the AI team in conjunction with all the other Optimize Rx teams deliver on these projects. And so that always means building an AI model to support each brand, then deploying that model such that it will drive messaging right at point of care. And that means messaging both in Optimize Rx's integrated platform and then in all of our partner platforms as well. And so it's really a team effort. Although I'm our VP of Data Product, I will always take the opportunity to refocus the conversation to our team. Without not only the AI team, but pretty much every other team across Optimize Rx, we would not be able to deploy the novel solutions that we are today.
So we write about AI and machine learning, ML, a lot. And it kind of all starts to blur together, if that makes sense. And Andy and I are not technologists. So if you could explain how, if the audience reads something that says AI, ML, and understand how you differentiate the approaches, are there like different philosophies or technologies that drive AI and ML? I can understand the ML piece more than the AI piece, but if you could just explain that for our audience, that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I would say you're hitting on a really common question across all domains, the difference between AI, ML, sometimes even the terms data science or big data or deep learning, all of these are really loaded buzzwords. And so it's very easy for many folks, supposed to don't do this day to day, to kind of get lost and maybe in the worst case, feel that it's exclusionary. And that's absolutely not what folks in my field want to ensure. And so I guess the way that I like to explain it is to pretty much drop all of the terminology and just think about a future scenario where you want to predict what thing might happen. And so it could be that I want to predict how much I'm going to weigh tomorrow. It could be that I want to predict when my delivery order is going to arrive. It could be that I want to predict which patients are going to be newly eligible for a drug. Any future prediction is an example where you might want to use a data science technique, an artificial intelligence technique, a machine learning technique. The differences between these terms are not as important as the fact that in all of these cases, we want to predict some future event. Broadly, artificial intelligence kind of describes the theoretical big picture, any ability to imitate future and human intelligence to predict what might happen in the future. Machine learning is kind of like a subset of that, where we use particular algorithms and data and historical data to actually perform that prediction. So I guess machine learning, I would consider a subset of AI. But in either case, I would say less important the distinction and more important the use case, the fact that we're trying to predict something. In every case that we're going to predict something, we need some record of historical data. Now, in the case of healthcare, the historical data that we sometimes use, we at OptimizeRx use, is RWD, real world data. And in most cases, that means claims data. And so from that claims data, we then layer on top an algorithm. And so right there, data plus algorithm, we're using machine learning, which is a subset of artificial intelligence. And from that data plus an algorithm, we're trying to predict future events. So I suppose that's the way that I would describe it, is to kind of drop the terminology and just think about the thing we are trying to do. In this case, emulate the singular human intelligence to predict one thing about the future.
That's very helpful. Thank you for that. It's hard for us to not put things in buckets, but I can see how that creates that area of misunderstanding or having the buzzword thing go on. So I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and I maybe it's just to add a little bit more there. I think part of the promise of AI has been so great for so long. I think there's a term that y'all may have heard on previous podcasts called the AI hype cycle. And so it's like a very common phenomenon where at previous points in history, people have touted the promise of AI. So in early, in the 50s and 60s, there's kind of the discovery that we could even predict things about the future in this very limited setting. And at some point, the hype outpaces the reality, and that reality is usually limited by computing power. And then there's like a valley, a trough within which the expectations of AI kind of drop to the floor. And then at some point, computing power catches up, or it just kind of comes back into vogue and the hype once again rises and rises, and then is kind of let down by the practical use cases. Now, I would say we are actually kind of in like a late stage AI hype cycle where there actually are a tremendous amount of use cases every day. Like every time we pick up our phone, every time we open our computer, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of different AI applications helping us and guiding us and maybe influencing us in small ways. And I think getting to a later question, one thing that I love about healthcare is there are so many more opportunities for us to utilize AI to try and capture new efficiencies within healthcare and ultimately make doctors and patients' lives better. It's a really cool field to be a part of. And I guess whatever I can do to try and help break down the barriers and make it feel a little bit less intimidating, less convoluted for others, that's kind of my focus.
And again, I appreciate your explanation with the valleys and the peaks, the historical reference. And now we do have all that computing power, and it's clearly way less expensive than it used to be, but, to put that and apply it and have those use cases. So we're going to talk for our audience specifically for clinical trial recruitment, because that's where we see a lot of data uses, as you're saying, with finding the patients at the right point in the funnel or the right point where they can be identified or approached for a clinical trial. So can you explain how you tie that together at OptimizeRx? And then you can use a case example if you want for that, or just explain it to us.
At OptimizeRx, we're focused on the area where we can deliver outsized value. And for us, that is at the point of care. And what that means from the perspective of a clinical trial is we can try and optimize the physician referral process. And it turns out that the best way to do that is actually to apply AI in real-world data. So versus the direct-to-consumer approach, we are focused on driving physician referrals, because when a patient is referred by their physician, they are so much more likely to complete the pre-screener. And so that is primarily what we're focused on. Our approach is, again, as I mentioned before, for some of our OptimizeRx's previous engagements, we start from real-world data. And from there, we try and identify current physicians who have potentially qualified patients right now in their patient profiles. Sometimes that means finding patients who maybe were like kind of needle in the haystack patients. And for clinical trials, that's really common. And sometimes that means among patients we maybe already know are qualified, just identifying the right point in time when they will interact with their prescribing physician. So we, again, kind of start from that real-world data, layer on an algorithm to try and predict which patients are eligible and when they're going to meet with their providers. And then at that time, communicate with that physician at point of care, providing them with the background on the clinical trial that they might need. Now, unless a provider is already kind of interested in clinical trials, up on the most recent literature, and considering all of that literature in the context of their current patients, it's very reasonable that they may not know a certain segment of their population is eligible for a new clinical trial. So when we can provide that information to providers right at point of care, we can essentially be that kind of outsourced research arm for that provider that they may not have time to do. And not only that, among the deluge of information that providers are getting every day, some of that information is at point of care, some not. Amongst the deluge of that information, we can provide that information to providers right at the time where they will be able to apply it in the next week when an eligible patient for a clinical trial might come into their office. And so we essentially maximize the chance that an eligible patient will be referred by their providing physician and that the pre-screener is filled out.
So does it pop up in the physician's EHR or does it pop up on a... You said you have a messaging system. So how does it just...
So maybe just taking a step back from AI a little bit, OptimizeRx is a network whereby life sciences brands can communicate with physicians right at point of care. And what that usually means is in their EHR. Every EHR is a little bit different. OptimizeRx as a platform for this communication helps make it easier for brands to communicate in the EHR. And actually there's one of the members of our AI team used to be a treating physician. And he mentions how very frequently in electronic health records, he'll be shown advertisements of various sorts. And many times he's told the tales of these messages not really being relevant to his patient population. But when there was a message that was relevant, he really appreciated that. And so it's just an anecdotal example of how even within an electronic health record, you can see that there is more information there than a provider can realistically use. So every time we can make one of those messages relevant to not only a provider, but their patients at the time when they can utilize that information, that's kind of the golden goose that our team is chasing and can provide.
Yeah, I could see that. I'll have to look over my, I have a doctor's appointment at the end of the month. I'm going to have to look over her shoulder and see what kind of messages pop up while she's in the EHR. And
yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that's a common occurrence.
Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. And so maybe just to circle back to how we're leveraging AI here is, again, we want patients to complete that pre-screener. And we feel that when referred by a physician, a patient is so much more likely to complete that screener. The physician-patient relationship is one of confidence and also one of authority. And so when a patient is told by their doctor, hey, you might be eligible for this clinical trial, the patient is so much more likely to trust that information and to follow through. And the benefit of AI here is amongst a sea of potentially eligible patients, we can find the right ones, the needle in the haystack patients who are going to be eligible for these clinical trials. And then amongst a wide array of messaging times, we can identify the exact right time to send that information to the provider. So when the provider opens up their EHR, they're going to get a message about a potential clinical trial. And maybe later that week, an eligible patient comes in. It's going to be information right when the provider can use it.
No, I totally understand. We do write a lot about how the trust of the physician is a large foundation for the choice to participate in a trial. So that makes a lot of sense.
So Mike, now I want to go into your own career journey and your own path upwards to where you are now. So you graduated from RIT with a degree in economics and finance. So could you describe your career journey and then how you eventually ended up in healthcare?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I was very similar to many other undergrads who kind of took classes that they were interested in, but really didn't have a clear plan for how they would play out in a career. And back when I was going to school, the thing that I loved was the science of making decisions. So analysis of data or maybe analysis of theory and trying to figure out how that affected behavior. And so that's almost exactly economics. So I loved economics. And right as I was going to school, I guess the buzzwords data science kind of started to become into vogue. And when I graduated, like many folks that study economics, I went into consulting for the first 3 years after undergrad. Among the various things that consultants do, one of those things was this thing called predictive modeling that I was like, how did I not know about this before? I love this. And I discovered in those years in consulting that predictive modeling, you know, data science was my passion. And from there, devoted myself to it. So picked up all of my data science and AI skills kind of on the job. Once I discovered that that was my passion, you know, I devoted every waking hour to it. And then I pivoted to try and get a job in that field. And among the sea of opportunities, the one area that was always important to me in my life was, I suppose, healthcare. I guess the physician-patient interaction was something that I always was really interested in. My dad was a physical therapist, and I've had a lot of health-related situations in my own life and in my family's lives. And I was thinking, gee, if there was any way that I could help use data to optimize that experience, that would be pretty cool. And one of the first jobs that I had as a data scientist was at a company called Athena Health, which is an electronic health record. And so funny, a few years later, now working at OptimizeRx, I'm working at a partner of those electronic health records. But at Athena, I worked on, at that point, you know, it wasn't even titled the data science team. We founded the data science team, and I worked there for a number of years, ultimately developing predictive models that could optimize the electronic health record itself. And so many electronic health records are quite cumbersome for not only providers, but the staff at a doctor's office or in a hospital. And so much of what I did was to try and develop models that would help make those folks' lives a little bit easier. Every minute saved to bill a claim is an improvement in the clinical workflow. And although many of those benefits redound to the periphery staff, the folks that work at doctor's offices, they actually do make doctors' lives a little bit less stressful. And that was what was really important to me, because I could really feel instances in my own life when I went to a doctor's office and the doctor was not as worried about interacting with their electronic health record, but more focused on me as the patient. That was really what I was interested in optimizing. And so at Athena, I kind of realized not only do I love data science, I actually love applying it to healthcare. From there, I realized that maybe among data scientists, I was a little bit more willing to interact with the business folks around the company. And I think one fatal flaw of many AI projects is that kind of the AI hype cycle. It's so funny that we were talking about that earlier in the interview. There is like an AI hype cycle even within companies. It's like we could do all these fun things with AI, but then when it comes to execution, many times the AI projects that we deploy do not actually solve customer use cases. And that was the worst feeling to me. And so I pivoted from being a pure AI engineer to being an AI product manager, where I would ensure that when our AI team or our data science team built a model, it solved a customer problem. And so my pivot into AI product then took me to HubSpot and then to DRG. And DRG was purchased by Clarivate. And then from Clarivate to OptimizeRx, where I moved into leadership of AI teams. But ultimately, trying to square that same circle of doing this cool thing, AI, but solving a customer problem with it. And so much the better when those customer problems are healthcare, because it really feels like you're making a difference. And I really believe we are. In most of these cases, while our clients are life sciences brands, when we serve our clients well, we will be making patients' lives better. I like every AI project that is successful here must be a win-win. If it's not, then you know, we're doing our job wrong. And so that's, I suppose, kind of my long and winding road here and why I'm so passionate about the work I'm doing now.
There was a lot of serendipity there with your career.
Yeah. Because data science and AI are relatively new fields, I find that many folks like myself have these circuitous career paths into and around AI. So many of my closest friends and former colleagues are PhDs in science fields or come from marketing or maybe former MDs. And because of that, the field of data science and AI is rich with this diversity that I love to interact with. And I think the other thing that's cool about data science is there is this embedded curiosity in looking back into data to try and find insights. And so maybe it's that search for curiosity or the thirst to learn new things that's caused these little changes and maybe caused capitalizing on some of these opportunities when they presented themselves. I guess the way that I might think about it is, in all my career changes, I've always focused on trying to learn and grow. And that's been my heuristic. Like, if I'm learning every day, then I feel like I'm in the right role. And that's what I've kind of used to guide my many changes.
That's awesome. I mean, I guess, you know, we hear this a lot, Andy and I, when we interview in the biotechs and in pharma, you know, they come from medical or science, like you say, and then they decide, well, the business side, I really want to help. I want to apply what I know to helping people. And you're basically saying the same thing with data. You know, you're just not using it with molecules or biologics, you know? So it's that, like you say, it's that passion for learning and everything. Super interesting. And then the other thing I was just noting about when you say the worst part is when somebody has a great idea, but you can't execute on it. I think that means that you have to like be, and you've clearly, you know, demonstrated that with Andy and I about interpreting. You have to be an interpreter for what people want and making it relatable to where they're at, you know, to talk through what they want and then make sure that that's coming alive in the project, you know, that that's exactly what they're going to get if it's possible.
Yeah. And actually, you're bringing up something that at OptimizeRx, I think we do, and all the credit goes to the other members of the AI team, some of my colleagues that do this. Before we engage in a project with a client, during that contracting phase, we have a very long set of joint application design discussions where we kind of start from a high level. As a life sciences brand, what are your goals? And then we try and componentize those goals and actually assess how we are going to operationalize, solve those goals using the OptimizeRx product suite. And if in those conversations, it turns out that predictive solutions, AI, are not the right fits, then of course, we're in the business of solving client problems. We are not in the business of utilizing AI at all costs. AI is one tool in the toolbox. It happens to be something that I'm really passionate about, but as I mentioned, maybe there's one thing worse than feeling like you've done an AI project that never gets used. It's kind of feeling like you are a customer of AI, that it hasn't come to fruition, or feeling like there's been a false promise, and identifying when it is correct to use and maybe when it's incorrect. I think it's ultimately good for everyone. Like, we're in the business of helping clients succeed, whether that involves a predictive solution or not.
Thanks, Mike. I mean, I think that those are all the questions that we had for you on our end. I mean, I think that the question Lisa asked, where you guys got into the AI machine learning, I think that our audience is going to appreciate that, because like she said, you know, sometimes we throw it all into one bucket. So thank you for that. And, you know, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you as well. It's been a joy talking.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate your insights.
What if you had limitless access to customer insights, accelerated timelines, and set fees? At True Serum Network, we're fueled by connections in virtually every area of healthcare as part of MJH Life Sciences. The result? Audience-fed creative and more powerful content in less time. True Serum Network, releasing what's real. Find out more at TrueSerumNTWK.com.